You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 222. As this releases on the podcast Thursday, July 30th, we are recording on Monday night, but tonight we've got a show, maybe not as timely to where we're going to miss any action over the next couple days, Steve, because it is a season-long view of players who we have missed out on this year. And for one reason or another, looking at guys that we did not have circled as targets in draft season or maybe early on in the season when the waiver wire was ripe for the picking, and we missed out on some of these guys. So it's a little bit of a humble pie episode, but it will be very fun to dig in and determine, was it a good process, bad results? Were there, you know, marked changes from last year to this year that we should be taking stock of moving forward? So gonna be great as always. I know we were talking offline a little bit, but home stretch, playoff picture is alive. Soto is not alive on my roster down the home stretch, so that hurt. It was tough to get ready for this, but then Lindor graced me with 12 total bases tonight. So, you know, I'm feeling the spirit of fantasy baseball, and even late in the summer, it never ceases to just have you on the roller coaster. So good to be back. Good to be talking with you, and excited for the topic tonight, man. How's it going over there?
The trials and tribulations, right? It's not a TJ quote, but that sounds like it could be one.
Yeah, not for the faint of heart.
Yeah, it's a shame. I don't know if we've talked about it. I think it's relatively recent with Soto, but it kind of got lost in how good of a year he's having just because of how bad the Mets have been. And there's two IL stints around that, right? So, yeah. I know last year was amazing with the 43 homers, 38 steals, but, you know, his OPS is 26 points higher than what it was even last year. So, yeah, just a shame. Hope he's back maybe sooner than we think, but those calf injuries are tricky. I know we saw it with Lindor too. So, a shame, yeah. But glad, you know, one guy goes down, another one comes back. That's kind of how it works, right?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Well, talk to me about the topic tonight, Steve, on the players we missed out on. I mean, it's fun because it's a chance to go back and look at ADP and kind of reflect on, you have such strong opinions of these guys from like December through March, and then the season kind of gets underway, and if you don't have any shares, you're kind of, from a baseball sense, paying attention to what's happening, but you're not locked in on them the way you are your other guys. So it is fun to dive in, but it's also fun to kind of challenge our process, because we've been doing this for, you know, 40 years between the two of us in our hobby. But then even on the pod, it's been 6-7 years where we kind of get our rhythm of who we're interested in, who we're not. And sometimes these outliers can do something that makes you take a step back and say, okay, should I be thinking about this player or this type of player differently in the future? So I want to hear your big picture thoughts, and we got probably 15 names or so to get through.
Yeah, I don't know if we've done this topic, and I like it. It's a different perspective, like you were hinting at there. I don't know. I always found myself as someone that like goes back to the draft board in like June, July. This time it's like, and I look at my team more often than not, especially my home league. For some reason, I'm a horrible drafter. It's out of all the skills in fantasy, drafting is by far my worst. You know, I profit from waiver wire and trading leagues trades, you know, especially on the hitting side. And that's even tougher as someone that, you know, punts pitching in the early rounds too. So I don't know, maybe I should switch that up and just take the sure thing that are pitchers and just pray they don't get hurt. But I always find myself going back to that draft board and be like, what was I thinking? Like, how did I pass on player X? How did I pass on player Y? And we're going to identify some of these guys that we have little or fewer shares than we should have. and look back at the process and see, hey, why did we miss that? Rather than me just wallowing in my own misery, saying, why did I take player X over player Y? How dumb are you? And just actually put some science behind it and see what we can do to maybe get better and avoid these mistakes in the future.
Yep. Yeah. And I think, like I mentioned, it was the, one of the OG chats on our YouTube live with a little piranha that would always kind of toss in some thoughts. And he was always the one who would say, is it good process and bad results? So I think that's another thing we got to keep in mind is like, if we knew everything we knew now, sure, we could do something different last year, but next year, do we still trust that this person's going to outperform peripherals, all that stuff? So excited to get into it. And we'll do this kind of in ADP order. And the first one is Nick Kurtz with an ADP coming into the season throughout the month of March of pick 20 is what I have, or pick 19. So I do think we talked about Kurtz, and I believe there was some discussion about kind of the first base vortex involved there as well, that there was like Vlad who had slipped down. And I believe our stance, Steve, is that we would rather catch kind of that tier two, if you will, with Matt, like a Matt Olson, to be fair, who's had a nice season. Bryce Harper was in that batch. I think we might have been in on Vlad a little bit. I don't have any shares, but it's Kurtz who kind of did the thing where we were like, oh, there's going to be, you can see some regression coming, the sophomore slump, whatever you want to call it. And yeah, to some extent, the last year, what was a dream rookie season with the 36 homers, 290 average, the batting average has come down 26 points to 264. But here we are end of July and he's got 21 homers. Everything under the hood looks as legit as it did last year, but my bias is I always run from these guys who are 30%+ strikeout rate. It's, you know, even in the heyday when it was Tyler O'Neill and my Cardinals, like that, it's just a huge red flag for me. Some of that's my home league settings, and I probably let it pour into Roto and 5x5 a little bit too much, but, you know, Kurtz feels like part of the mold in the past year or two that's like, let the kids play. Some of these guys that just come out and swing out of their shoes and have like real pop. It feels like this isn't a, I know we've talked for all the talk this year about Luis Lara. There's some other ones we talked about where we were like, maybe this archetype coming back of like the pure hit tool guy, but Kurtz is like a poster boy of this past 4 or 5 years. I think we'll talk about a couple other ones on this show. I missed, and that's what was behind it. I want to hear from you, you know, why you were, I don't want to say fading, but passing on Kurtz, if you were. And I'm curious if this is enough to where you're like, all right, I'm in next year, regardless of the 30% K rate.
Yeah. Cliff Notes, I'm in. I think that we need to adjust to this high level hitter. We'll talk about another one in a few segments here that can survive with this 30% strikeout rate. It's a different type of player. I know that there's some lean the other way now with some more of these contact oriented guys like McGonagall and yeah, coming up that have that archetype, and there's pushback the other way. It probably was tilted too far to the swing and miss and power, but the top end of the top end guys are still elite, and the ones that have a strikeout rate that maybe is around 29-31%, they're still first round talent. There's not many of them, but Nick Kurtz is one of the few. I do have one share. It is from my first draft of the season back in January, a draft and hold. And I don't know if I want to take full credit because it was when like the NFBC app was like down. So I got auto drafted in like two or three of the first rounds. I know I definitely got auto drafted on my Schwarber pick, which ended up being good. And I don't know if I got auto drafted on Kurtz as well. But I'll take it. And that team is, I think it's currently in the money too. So Yeah, I do have a share, but overall I have a lot more shares of Vlad. I didn't pick Vlad in this league. He went a few picks before in the second round, but in several other drafts, I made the mistake of taking Vlad over Kurtz. Honestly, I think maybe I put too much stock in the postseason for Vlad, which is a mistake that I've made in the past. I've also put too much stock in World Baseball Classic. I essentially need to not watch those,
or at least,
you know,
resist.
Take all fantasy implications out of the postseason and any other off-season tournament, and just focus on what goes on in the year, and I'd be much better off. But yeah, it's a big miss by me. Kurtz, I know that we may be saving this topic for a rainy day, but I think he is, he's a surefire first rounder next year.
One thing I would add on, like, overall process learnings, and I keep in mind, Kurtz has gone the wrong direction on strikeout rate. Last year was 31. Yeah. So far it's 32. But I am guilty of writing these guys off as like, oh, they're hackers at the dish, you know, whatever, the three true outcomes. With Kurtz, it is, or not with Kurtz, but with these profile players that strike out a ton, especially when they come up and they're young, there might be a process learning that, like, you can take a step forward. Like, Fernando Tatis, his first year was a 30% strikeout guy. Going through, I know it's a bad example right now because it's kind of boomeranging around, but Austin Riley, that first year was 36% strikeout rate, and then he had some, you know, stellar years in between there. Like, it is not that uncommon for some of these hackers to, like, clean up the K rate. Like, Byron Buxton is another one. So it's like, are these guys who just have innate pop and can be 35, 40 home run hitters, if they're great baseball players, who's to say that it's not part of their ceiling to clean that stuff up?
I tell you what, I'll take Tatis with the 28% strikeout rate and 30% strikeout rate from his rookie year. Rather than what we've got in the last 3 years.
Yeah, it's a good point. The production
even throwing out this year, we had a good 20% strikeout rate. Last year, when he had an 18.7% strikeout rate, the best of his career, was probably his fourth or fifth best season, right? Or third or fourth best season.
Yeah, that's a different argument that it's actually
here's
not
the thing
bad
with
for
Kurtz,
the game.
Here's the thing with Kurtz, too, and spoiler alert, Wood, who we'll get to, they don't chase. They're going to swing and miss. They're going to take their hacks, but they're not going to be putting themselves in bad counts by swinging at pitches outside the zone.
This is the Schwarber. This is the Kyle Schwarber.
Yeah, yep. The fact that they don't chase is such a big deal when there's that much swing and miss. You get into trouble when it's both. The fact that they don't chase is, I think, the key to their success.
I like it. I think that is the big learning is, high strikeout, but good chase. And that's something throughout the offseason. I want you to call me on that, Steve, because you know I'll be the one that's like, oh, I can't do the strikeouts. But I think we're seeing a pattern there. All right. So moving from Kurtz at pick 20 to PCA at pick 32. This is a guy that neither one of us were in on, Steve. Nope. And I think, unlike Kurtz,
any shares.
The chase rate was awful. Second percentile. The K rate was 33rd percentile. So somewhat high strikeout, but overall just like no one knew what to expect with PCA, especially with the streakiness from last year. When you look at certain months that were down at like 220 or 160, and then there's other months where he's going off. And that was probably writing on the wall, because this year he's been the streakiest guy, and put in the rundown. We always say when the weather heats up, and you know what, wait for the weather to heat up. PCA is the poster boy for that this year. And in July, June and July has completely gone off, as everyone knows, with the 11 homers in June, and then followed it up in July with an 1134 OPS. So the hard part for me with PCA is not why did I miss. I know exactly why I missed. Mm-hmm. I actually don't question the process, even with him hitting 290 on the season at this point and looking like making us look foolish. I still look at the whole body of work and I'm like, this guy scares me on draft day. And it usually comes with some helium just because he's such an exciting player. Where does he go next year? And will I be in again? I think is the, or will I be out again? I guess is the question. Like, do you think PCA is around the turn with how just how dominant he's turned it on?
Yeah. I mean, he's not, if we drafted tomorrow for 2027, he is not falling past the second round. Especially with how good the surface numbers are, right? Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a super high BABIP at 363. You know, so maybe that 290 is going to come down, but that's what it is right now. You know, 932 OPS. He's 932 OPS. He's walking this year. That's the big difference in the, you know, plate discipline. Even though under the hood, it's not that much better, right? The squared, the chase rate has improved. It's still only 23rd percentile, but it's improved from second percentile. The whiff rate actually is a little bit better too. It's 10 percentile, and it's better. It was at 23% up to 32%. The strikeout rate actually got worse. It's dropped from 33rd percentile to 23rd percentile. And it, overall, in the numbers wise, it went from 24% to 26.3%. So there's more Ks, more walks, slight improvement in chase rate. The contact rate has gone up a bit. The swing strike rate has improved dramatically from 16% to 13%. That's still not great, but there's a big improvement there. What's interesting is, like, what's driving this is the improvement in quality of contact.
True.
The hard hit rate's up from 42% to 48%. Career high in max EV at 114.6. Hard hit rate's better overall. That's a bit surprising. And the pull air was elite last year, and it's even better this year. It's went from 30% to 32%. So, you know, it's impressive what he's done. It's maybe not exactly how I would have envisioned improvement coming from him. I don't know if that makes me feel better about him. Like, we saw the streaks again this year, right? Like, April and May were horrible. He was dropped in some leagues again. He was traded for pennies on the dollar in lots of leagues in April, May. People just weren't going to be able, they didn't want to deal with the second half and that struggle. I wouldn't be surprised if something comes again, and I think he's just going to be a streaky hitter. But I think that you're going to look up at the end of the year and the floor is going to be sort of 2025, where it was 30-30. You know, maybe a low batting average. Maybe the OPS doesn't start with an 8, but it's still a really good fantasy season. And then the strong years will look like this.
Yeah, I think I am, not that it's a hot take by any stretch, but I think I'm converted here on PCA. I feel like we've now seen a kind of promising breakout, flashy 2024, but then a 2025 and a 2026 that look like pretty much all-star roto numbers. Mm-hmm. And what's intriguing to me is what you brought up of, like, the contact. Now, last year, his ICR on pitcherless, ideal contact rate, was league average, like smack in the middle, 50th percentile. This year, it's 91st percentile.
Yeah.
He is 91st percentile in fly ball rates. And then, like you said, Steve, the pull air is as good as it's been.
It's like league leading stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's where, to me, like, you keep looking at, like, are there weak spots? And he's done damage against, like, every pitch type. Like, he gets popped from all these different ways. And we know he's such a gamer, right? Like, he's one of those guys that you feel like is making a push to be Cooperstown or have a 40-40 season. Like, he just seems like a stat rat. He's got the intangibles, I guess, to where I also feel like he cares about his performance. And because he's got, as the kids say, that dog in him, I also feel like some of these incremental growth areas of, like, strikeout rate and the chase rate getting better, things like that, I wouldn't count him out. I mean, that's another spoiler segue that, like, when we talk about Abrams, some of this stuff reminds me that, like, okay, I thought that I knew what C.J. Abrams' plate discipline looked like after a couple of years, and, like, then you start seeing improvements year over year. So the ceiling for PCA is probably in that same breath as, like, Bobby Witt, right? Like, if he could put it all together. I mean, you would point to batting average, but here he is with a 290 average and outperforming, yes, but it's hard to poke holes in it. I mean, you're not signing up for a 290, to be fair, but I still think I would not run from him if he fell to me in a second round next year. So, yeah.
His pull air is fourth in the league among qualified hitters. So, yeah. And I agree with everything you said. Like, he's aware of what he needs to improve on, right? I guarantee you that. And he's just 24 years old, so not even in his power prime yet. So I wouldn't be surprised if some of those quality contact metrics improve. And, you know, like we said with Kurtz, like, there's different ways to be successful. Like, you could have blue sliders on Savant in different categories and still be a really good player. And that's what PCA is doing here.
Well, moving on to somebody whose only blue slider is sprint speed, Yordan Alvarez, who I feel like has been on your, like, all century team, Steve, in terms of the love you've shown Yordan over the years. So I wanted to throw him on the rundown because, and this is more on me than you, you'll have to speak for yourself, but it just took the 1 year last year with, you know, a 60-day IL stint for the hand and then had an ankle injury late. It was just a complete wash of a year. And we saw the industry slide him all the way back to ADP 36. And, you know, if he was, like, falling to me in that area, I was like, oh, I can't believe Yordan's going that late. But certainly wasn't, you know, looking at a 27th pick and being like, I'm going to reach for Yordan here. And here he is about to have a high watermark on an incredible career for home runs. He's sitting at 34 and his all-time high is 37. And obviously is about 40 games shy of that season. Health pending, knock on wood. We should see the best year of Alvarez's career, hitting 323. Not a ton to add on the batted ball data that hasn't always been true, that he's just one of the best pure hitters ever, right? But at age 29, like, there just shouldn't have been. This one almost felt like it was right in front of us on the value, and I do not have enough, but you tell me what you got.
Yeah, I have a lot of shares. I should have more. This should have been, like, a second round target, like, no matter where I was drafting in the second round. It just goes to show how much recency bias affects us. And if you're pained by Alvarez, like, I drafted him everywhere in 2025 as well. And, you know, suffered that, you know, even when he played, the homers weren't there and the numbers weren't good. And it was like, how is this possible for a guy that's been this good? He reminded us how good he is. Very quickly this year and has done so all year long. Like, I don't know. Like, I've always kept in the back of my mind, like, Yordan Alvarez is the safest first round hitter, you know, outside of including speed, that there is. Like, he is that good of a hitter. And, like, I always reminded myself that and had shares of him in the first round when he was going there because of that. And I needed to remind myself of that more, despite what happened last year, and will continue to do so, maybe with other guys that have disappointing years this year due to injury or things like that. But kind of there's not many that are as good as Yordan. Go ahead.
No, I didn't mean to interrupt. I was just going to say, as you were talking about that best pure hitter, for some reason, JD Martinez popped up in my mind of that, like, prime JD.
I had JD Martinez every single year in Ivy League. That was my, you know, I went from David Ortiz as being, like, my pillar of my offense for fantasy to JD Martinez, and now it should be Yordan. I know it's a little different because Yordan is better than those guys, honestly. Maybe not Ortiz, but tracking to be potentially. And he has a higher cost. There was sort of a discount on JD and
in the later years, yeah. I got his page up right now. There's a 330-43 homer season. Yeah, dude, what a beast.
Martinez was a great player, one of my favorites. Yeah.
Yeah. No, but I think Jordan, good to know you. At least it's not a show loss that you had three shares. So yeah. I agree there. All right, let's talk about James Wood, Steve, because he kind of fits into the same mold, right? Where we ran away from the strikeout rate, at least I did, but a 23-year-old. So I think that's another lesson that we even had maybe end of 2024 year when we did lessons learned. I still remember one of mine was, it's a young man's game. Like, you got to give some of these breakout stars a little extra grace if something looks streaky, or like last year where, again, I mean, almost identical strikeout rate to Nick Kurtz, and Wood still had 31 homers, 15 steals last year. I think it was just because, didn't he get, it was a really cold, well, he had an injury, let me see, in 2025, it was, the splits were a 915 first half and for OPS, 915 OPS, and second half was a 689 OPS.
I'm curious as where we had him when we did this, the redraft show for the first round. Like, I think we had him maybe just outside the first round. Because the fall off really maybe started just around then. The injury is tough because that news didn't come out until like April 3rd after he started the season on fire. It was where was this? Like, I loved Wood. If I had this information in draft season, I would have been all over it and attributed that second half to what, he was quoted to Spencer Neusbaum of The Athletic that it was a nagging injury. One series I feel great, the next not so great. So just series by series, week by week thing. It was a knee and quadricep that he was dealing with in the second half. So, that looked like fatigue. Pair that with the K rate, and there you go. There's why your first round talent is being drafted in the second and third round, and why I did not have any shares of James Wood when I should have, and just tried to make a mental note of how unbelievable this guy's power was when he was hitting opposite field home runs off 100-mile-hour fastballs high and away with ease. There's a lot of guys that are first round talent. So maybe you want to be on the end of the draft, the end of round the next year. When we do this show, maybe next week we'll hash that out. But yeah, James Wood, I like it. Ridiculous.
Yeah, we should do, instead of just doing first round, we should do the first two rounds.
And, yeah, maybe we could, I don't know, maybe we'll have to KDS. Get someone on or something, and we could each draft a team or something like that.
Yeah, that'd be fun. James Wood, I mean, I guess a learning other than what we've already said about Kurtz. Do you think, Steve, we didn't know about the injury, but do you think there's any truth to overreacting to second half splits for hitters? I mean, it's a little bit different when a pitcher adds a pitch and second half looks great. But I know there's been some studies that full season stat lines are better indicator. It's a stickier metric, right? Than just
for hitters, especially. Yeah. I mean, look, it. This is small sample bias, and we're just cherry picking them. But if you paid attention to only PCA's second half and James Wood's second half, you're missing out on a few good players. We are.
Yep. Okay. Well, we got some more good players. We got about three more hitters and a handful of pitchers. But we're gonna take our first ad break, and we'll be right back after this. Okay, so it's my task for the rest of eternity to fall on the sword that C.J. Abrams has arrived. 295 batting average, 938 OPS, 27 homers, and 19 steals. You would have.
Imagine I told you that line was his season line, like what you.
But it would have been blown away. If you said 19 homers, 27 steals, I'd be like, that's what we signed up for. But this pop, it's like, how crazy will this go? Because even in the month of July, it's just gotten more and more. 9 home runs in the month of July. All of a sudden, you look at C.J. Abrams and you're like, wait a minute, could we see a 40-30 season here? Could we see 35-30? It has just been an insane surge here for a guy that was going at pick 65 and was my chalkboard fade, Steve. So I think, to speak for my own passing up of C.J. Abrams, one, I was reluctant to accept. I was kind of stuck in my ways of viewing C.J. Abrams as not a bust necessarily, but I thought what you see is what you get. He's going to be a 245, 250 hitter. The counting stats will not be impressive, and he'll probably get you your 20, 30 line, but that it doesn't all add up. I remember pulling up the player rater from the year prior, and it's like, yeah, even though 19 homers and 31 steals sounds nice, he only had 60 RBIs, so that like 150 runs in RBIs isn't enough to do everything. Well, he's already at 150, and he's got two more months to play, thanks to 82 RBIs so far. And some of this was the Nationals offense. Some of it was also C.J. Abrams taking a big step forward on batted ball, I guess his hard contact, his barrel rate, all of that has gone up, which tough. You don't have a crystal ball on all of that, but maybe I was too closed off to the possible breakout for another guy who, by the way, is just 25 years old. Your thoughts on C.J. Abrams, Steve?
Yeah, total miss by me as well. I was essentially out and thought I had C.J. Abrams pinned too, as someone that could be, you know, 250, 260, 18 homers, 20-ish steals, like a good player, and someone that I would have taken had I needed a shortstop at that time, but didn't end up necessarily needing one at that point. Either got one earlier or waited. But there's a lot that went on here that we missed. I think a big part of it is the new Nationals front office and their acceptance and a complete overhaul of their approach to you know, modern training and bat speed training and driveline implementation into their organization. They hired several guys on the pitching end. They hired a few guys on the hitting end as well. And there was a great article by Travis Sawchuk from last week, last Monday, at Driveline that talks about the improvements that Abrams made in the offseason. He was introduced to bat speed training, you know, the fast swing percentage and blast percentage have all improved along with his bat speed. And then, you know, they go on to say how they don't just train for bat speed. They talk about, you know, focusing on swing paths, and that's, you know, the best of Abrams' career so far too, at his launch angle sweet spot percentage at 62%. That being said, like, there's a really good player here, and he's having an amazing year. I out of all the players that we're, you know, talk about, I maybe buy Abrams the least for last year, just because, you know, the barrel rate's good. It's not amazing. The hard hit rate's good. It's not amazing. Same with the bat speed. It's still just 59th percentile. And the quality of contact or the plate skills are all, you know, around the same. Still strikes out around league average, still chases, swings and misses a good amount. Doesn't really walk that much. You know, that being said, I think that there is like a floor of like 20, 25, 250, 260, like a really good player. Like, you know, sort of this is, I think, just, you know, close to the 90th percentile outcome for Abrams. But the pull air percentage is up there. It's a good park. It's a good lineup. And I also think that maybe this is like sort of our hyper focus and intertwining of real life baseball getting in the way. Like, all the talks with Abrams is his, you know, lack of being good defensive shortstop and how eventually he'll need to move to second. You know, a year and a half ago or a year and a few months ago, we were talking about how he was suspended at the end of the season for being, you know, out all night and caught in a casino in Chicago when they had a day game at the Cubs in just a few hours. So that sort of stuff leaks in and skews your perspective of a player, whether you're conscious of it or not. At least that's how I feel. And I think that sort of played against him. And, you know, it's like you said with PCA, like, this is a guy that wants to do well and was a big prospect and still young and still can improve. So, yeah, props to Abrams. It was a total miss on my fault too. And honestly, maybe I was just still a little too harsh there, not to be a waffler there, but, you know, there's still a lot to like, at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's like water is wet, but between Kurtz, PCA, James Wood, and Abrams, like another theme here is like these guys came in with major pedigrees, and like there might be bumps in the road, but maybe you need to be a little cautious to write off. I mean, you could say the same thing about Jordan Walker, right? And he was on Driveline as well. So between Abrams and Jordan Walker, I think we have to do a fully dedicated Driveline off-season show, Steve, and just say, all right, let's drink the Kool-Aid here.
Here's the problem, though. I had no idea, and maybe this is just a miss by me.
I didn't either.
I guess the front office for the Nationals thing should have been the That's a miss on our part to not.
Yeah, for sure. And that's a big factor too. That would have been like who could have guessed.
Maybe you think
that,
about the pitching more than that though, you know, right? Like it's like, right. The Nats, remember the 2 years ago or whatever, they're like it doesn't matter how hard you throw a ball for and the whole anti-analytics thing that the signs that they had up for that, like it's complete overall. So
it is, and it's
maybe we
should
have put some more stock into that.
Yeah, I think that's a good lesson for the offseason, too, is like what organizations might turn it around and then turn C.J. Abrams into a 100 RBI type of guy. Last note, just because it was on the notes here, but the damage Abrams has done on fastballs this season. Last year, a 259 average and a 434 slug. This year, up to a 383 batting average and a 617 slug. So, yeah. With that pull air rate, that's a good combination.
Improved bat speed, improved swing path. Like all that's things. The little thing you need to crush those fastballs. Yeah.
Some other ones we'll move quicker on just to round out the hitters. Andy Páez, which this was another one of my chalkboard fades, Steve. And this is one that at least feels like I can spare the blushes of the first month or two where Páez looked like an MVP. He has really come down to life. It was the did PCA like steal his powers like the Space Jam Monstars? But as soon as summer hit, Páez has slumped with a .225 batting average over the past couple months and a .670 OPS. Second season in a row that Páez has like his productions come in spurts, and you know, like I said, I don't think this is a major miss from where I was at last year. And then Munetake Murakami is another one that we've talked about on the show a time or two. I think he falls similarly into that mini Schwarber category. But he's another guy that we kind of got scared off of because of the strikeout rate, because of a lot of the projection systems having him at like a .215, .220 batting average. So anything to add on those two hitters before we jump over to some pitchers?
Yeah, Murakami, I think I have one share. It was from my earliest draft in January, and I think I was kind of out on that, one, because of the striker rate, and two, just like the whole discourse on him on Twitter, Blue Sky, whatever, just about how, you know, his plate approach, K rate, it would have been the worst in the majors, right? And it was in, you know, not the MLB. Like, how is he going to make any contact ever? Mm-hmm. And the fact that he didn't sign with like a big team to a gigantic deal.
Yeah.
I think that sort of got too much amplification, and I fell victim to the hive mind of that rather than just saying, okay, this is a guy that's going cheaply around pick 200, even earlier than that in early drafts, that has the potential to hit 30 homers, right? I mean, he's going to past that for sure, right? He almost had whatever, he was at 20 in May at one point, or at least it seemed like it. So like I think it's kind of like, all right, you need to just sometimes fade that noise and focus on what you could see here, and just the simplest outcome is that, okay, here's this great power hitter that's coming over that's affordable, just take them and see what happens, especially at that cost. I think maybe next year it'll still be a big discount just because of this injury and the fact that, maybe it's, you know, it's not going to be as good a year as Kurtz or Wood or anything like that. I think there will be another decent buying opportunity for Murakami here.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think because the batting average is low, if his homer total finishes out at like 31, he might get unfairly lumped in like the Jake Berger territory when in reality we're probably looking at a guy that's more like, you know, early days Kyle Schwarber, that you got to take your medicine with the batting average, but it could come with 40, 45 homers. All right, let's move over to some pitchers and roll way back from ADP 200 for Murakami to Jesus Luzardo at 74. Maybe we can even put Luzardo and Dylan Cease in the same category, because Cease was like three picks after. Mm-hmm. And I feel like these have a similar story, Steve, where, like, first of all, just giving flowers to Luzardo, I was there on rookie year and I was like watching his starts. I was all about Luzardo. And then, you know, for whatever reason, I've just slowly moved off. It seems like he's kind of one that has had his ups and downs. Like, he had that one big 2023 where it was like 200 strikeouts and, you know, good ratios. And then he followed up the next year with a pretty disastrous shortened season. But then, by all accounts, like, yeah, he's not a standout in whip, which may have been part of the process that it's faded him. But, you know, he's usually a really bankable source of strikeouts, and he has been this year. And then this year it's come with a 3.31 ERA and a 1.17 whip. I guess, you know, to roll in the rationale with Cease, for both of these guys, I was interested. It's just, it felt like they weren't the shiny toy pitchers that could maybe erupt and be like SP1s, like some of the guys we were looking at around him, whether it was Nolan McClain or Chase Burns, Schlittler, Mizorowski. And some of those guys were going, Yuri Perez, another one. A lot of those guys were going what would have been one, maybe two rounds later, full rounds later. So I viewed it as kind of a dead zone, and maybe there was a way where you could have ended up with a couple of those guys. But Cease, we were somewhat in on just because of the team context, and, you know, we've liked him over the years. But talk to me about these two. Do you feel like we overlooked them? Why is that? And is it as simple as like whip and there were more exciting names around them?
Luzardo, for me, I think it's because I had a bunch of them the year before at a very cheap price, realized that profit, and was like, you know, I got Luzardo off waivers or in the last round in 2025. Why am I paying, you know, sixth round price on him, fifth round price on him?
Good point.
And it's because he's good. I also think that there is, like, with both of these guys, like, the blow up start foul, you know, risk, which they're going to happen. And they've happened plenty this year to Luzardo, right? Like, yeah, these guys aren't going to have like two ERAs because they're going to have the 8-run starts, but all the other starts are going to be really good. There's a lot of strikeouts. I think these are players that all in all, probably every year are going to be available at a discount just because of the nature of their volatility. Or the volatility in their profile, but they have elite strikeout rates, you know, and they're pretty bankable. So I think that that's sort of what you need to focus on, and maybe a better target than we thought of, and perhaps maybe less risky than we thought of. I know that's like ironic with me just saying how volatile they are, but it would have been a great idea to pair one of these two with one of those, you know, group of young starters, right? You would have had a really, really good pitching staff at probably a cost that was much less, much more palatable than investing like in pocket aces. If you would have went like Luzardo and Schlittler, Luzardo and Mizorowski, because that could have been possible if you went pitchers in like round 6-7.
Yeah. One thing to note with Cease is he did tinker a little bit by like introducing or at least actually using a changeup this year that's been really, really good pitch, like arguably his best, with a 1.35 batting average against, 53% whiff rate. And I think the crazy thing, you got to go back mentally, because Cease was a bizarre like industry helium, like the type that would have not been in the top 100 7 years ago, you know what I mean? Because his his baseball card last year was 4.55 ERA, a 1.33 WHIP, and then so you know he got paid big, and everyone was like, the Blue Jays defense is so good, and I guess maybe there's not to just make a sweeping generalization off of like one player, but there was definitely an element of like, man, he's moving up this far and he had a 4.55, but like in modern day, like there's just things that
people
matter
see,
way
people
way
see
more.
Past it, man. Like,
yeah,
you know, I mean, to be fair, like there are years, like Cease had a year where he had a 1.42 WHIP and a 4.58 ERA in 2023. Yeah, it was with a 28% strikeout rate, but still, you know, WHIP and ERA are categories and standard 5x5. But you know, I think it's just, you're right though. And like, this would have been a pick 120, if this was 80, if this was 2015 rather than 2025, the 4.55 ERA and the 1.33 WHIP would have been the focal point. Whereas nowadays it's like, nobody really cares about that. They see a 20% strikeout minus walk rate and they're good. They know that that's worth a top 80 pick.
Yeah. Yeah, because the flip side of the coin is like Trevor Rogers, right? Which when we were making up reasons for his 1.81 ERA and 0.9 WHIP, and he's had his own like, you know, ups and downs this season.
Yeah, and he's right at the ship. Yeah.
Yeah, he's right at the ship, but point being that it's like there is some validity to some of those major industry moves, industry helium, all that stuff. So. Got a few more pitchers we will get to, but we are due for our second ad break, and we'll be right back after this. Okay, so Steve, if we just go ahead and press fast forward on Eury Pérez and Cam Schlittler and Chase Burns and Jacob Mizorowski that has yet again confirmed for us that the honeypot from, for the most part, from pick 85 to 130 is worth double, triple tapping, whatever you want to call it. Then you get to Sonny Gray at pick 135, who was sandwiched between Mizorowski, Schlittler, and one Zach Wheeler, who I know was one of your chalkboard targets, but I had zero shares, and I'm kicking myself as our second place team in my home league has just been riding that to the bank. Sonny Gray, though, is the man we're talking about because he is 36 years old, and he is rocking a 2.78 ERA. His xERA is 3.79, but PLV loves him over on the pitcherless side with a 2.53 PLA. So I guess to do the show justice, we have to talk about why we skipped Sonny Gray, but for me it's as simple as, like, he's 35 years old, he's always full of surprises, and they're not always the good surprises. And he was surrounded by way, way more interesting names. So that's my rationale. The more interesting question for me is, with a guy that seems to be like continually defying the odds, will we be interested in Sonny Gray next year? Because yet again, he is not going to be drafted at what his baseball card would suggest. It's probably going to be a lot of ageism fading, and you know, he could land at like pick 110 when he's again surrounded by the honeypot. Are we good with our process on this, and we're still skipping Sonny Gray, or is there enough here to where we're like, maybe we should give him a shot at age 37?
I would have been in on Sonny Gray as like a oatmeal-y back end starter pick if he wasn't around all those sexy names, but just the fact that, yes, he's aging, he's moving from one of the best pitcher parks in St. Louis to one of the worst pitcher parks in Boston, there was a clear decline, at least in the surface stats, and under the hood as well. You know, there was a decline in what was an elite K rate in 2024 from 30% down to 27%, and that's continued this year. The walk rate's gotten worse. The K rate's down to just 22%. The swing strike rate has gone down with it. The quality contact that he's allowed is better, but we know that that's noisy from year to year. Mm-hmm. I tend to believe, despite the fact that he has just a 1.16 WHIP, I tend to believe the 3.80 xERA, the 3.89 Sierra. And that's where I'll draft him next year. I just don't know if he'll be at that cost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think.
And who knows where he's going to be? Like, I know that it's funny. 2 weeks ago, you would have thought the Red Sox were absolutely trading him and being sellers, but now they're probably looking to buy and will probably most likely hold on to Sonny Gray just because he has 2 years on his contract after this.
Yep. Yeah, I think he's going to be the one of the types that we just have to live with, that somebody else is going to roll with them. And probably
do well, right?
Like, exactly, right. Yeah. I mean, this is the like, again, just like the poster boy, I don't know, in your home leagues where it's like, oh, this guy's roster isn't that good. And then the week you're facing him, you're like, man, this guy's dealing. Oh, Sonny Gray's complete game. So, yeah, we know the type. All right, Justin Robleski. This is now into territory of undrafted range. And we did bring up Robleski about a month ago on the show and had our debates because he had just started finding strikeouts with the 11 strikeout game against the Athletics. But he's followed up since then with 9 Ks against the Rockies and then 7 Ks against the Phillies, which might be the more impressive start with just one earned run in Philadelphia. So Robleski, like, command artist is what we were saying, but leave it to the Dodgers to start unlocking swing and miss strikeout stuff that it's still a little bit tough to pin down, like what pitch is the superhero here in terms of like swing and miss stuff. But he's definitely a pitcher's pitcher, it seems, with the fact that he uses several to get strikeouts, even though none of them really pop as like the elite pitch. Talk to me about Robleski. Maybe he's an interesting one to include on this because it was more of a waiver wire miss. But what are your thoughts, Steve?
Yeah, I think maybe this is more of a miss in season for me. I think there needs to be more credence paid to a team that, like the Dodgers, that's leaving a guy that you may not expect to be in the rotation, right? Like, we all like Sasaki and his potential. We all,
yeah, everybody was talking about who is the prospect, River Ryan.
River Ryan and Emichian and his fastball and his K potential. And yet here's Robleski, you know, chugging along in the Dodgers rotation, just doing well. And, you know, was probably like a clear sell early in the season when he was getting good results but didn't have the strikeout rates. And what do you know, lo and behold, he's added a few pitches, added strikeout rate. There you go. I know that this is easier said in hindsight, but I think that the process here is maybe pay attention to teams like the Rays, like the Dodgers,
Brewers, that, Kyle Harrison,
give an extra thought to some guys that may fall outside of your process when they're sticking in rotations like that.
Yeah, I think that's well said. And 10 years ago, how many times did that happen with like the Guardians? You know what I mean? So it's like, I think that's fair. One that to round out the show that we wouldn't have seen coming. Again, we've talked about the Nationals.
This is a sweet spot for us. So I'm pretty bummed that we missed out on this one.
Yeah, I think when you look at Foster Griffin, it was a name we brought up a couple times throughout the show. Shout out TJ as well. The loyal listener has been in throughout the year. But Foster Griffin has just slowly proven that he's here with this 2.76 ERA. The strikeout numbers haven't been anything like all that eye-popping, but a 103 whip to add to it, like it's another guy in the same breath when you talk about like command artists. You brought up, Steve, that organizationally, like front office, you think about it helping pitchers. Mm-hmm. But the biggest thing to bury the lead, like you said, is another guy who's come overseas and is kind of like renaissance, second lease on life. What are your thoughts on Foster Griffin here? We had a couple others that we were trying to make a thing, but this was the one we missed.
Yeah, we mentioned Cody Potts. We mentioned on the Astros too. I'm missing who that was that I was relatively
Ryan Weiss. Yeah, I think.
I know Nick liked him too. Griffin should have been mentioned. In hindsight, the Nationals with their new front office, the fact that they brought him in, that should have been an indicator. And I think, you know, maybe we didn't mention him because he didn't have the eye-popping 35-40% strikeout rate like Ponce did in the KBO. It was just 25%, but the walk rate was still really good. The results were really good. And that's ported over to the bigs leagues, 23% strikeout rate, 6% walk rate, 124 innings with, 276 ERA. Yeah, I'm going to price him at what the ERA indicators are, at his 3.76 ERA, at the fact that, he doesn't have a 25% strikeout, it's just 23%, and it's still, the 18% K minus BB, but that's not elite. That's really good. So I'm going to be conscious of that in drafting him for next year, but still a bummer that, that's sort of a big focus on us. It's a, I know we like to focus on some of those guys coming over that refine themselves overseas. But Foster Griffin should have been in that camp and should have been someone that we were taking flyers on in draft and holds. It's a bummer that we mentioned basically everyone else but him. But if Cody Ponce doesn't get hurt on opening day,
don't remind me, man.
Yeah, I think we might be singing his praises too.
Major buzzkill that one was. And a shout out too with the Nats. Cade Cavalli is looking like the real deal with the swing and miss stuff. So another big prospect name, late bloomer here. So fun show. Hopefully you guys appreciated this. I don't know if you're nodding your heads on missing some of these guys. But yeah, I think some good lessons learned there. We had high strikeout rate, but also good chase rate as a big theme. I think we talked about kind of the young man's game once again, and some of those out and out athletes or high prospect pedigrees, giving them a little bit of extra grace until they're at like age 25 that they can make some major changes. And then on the pitching side, there's ways to still attack the honeypot of pitching, but not run away from guys that rightfully have made some changes or new team environments. So, yeah, good show all around, Steve. And then, yeah, if you got any closing thoughts on the topic, but I feel like it's a show we should do every year, I feel like.
Yeah. Definitely hoping to take some lessons here and keep this in mind as we head down the home stretch and start to get ready for next year. We'll be here sooner than you think.
Love it. And I think we landed on next week's show as well, that we'll do drafting the first and second round, and maybe we'll figure out what our preferences for KDS, if we really like that 1-2 turn or where things sit there. So yeah, we'll be back next week, but until then, thanks for talking baseball with us.
Thanks guys. Later.